Inside the halls of San Diego State University lies a program dedicated to storytelling and pursuing the truth. Welcome to Where You At, a podcast that takes you inside the work of alumni for the School of Journalism and Media Studies at San Diego State. Our goal is to show the success of our alumni, inspire students with the stories, and connect students and alums on a pathway to journalism success. And now, here's your host, Josh Sushant.
This week on the Where You At podcast, we are heading up to Bakersfield, California. And oh my goodness, this episode is going to be so much fun because we're talking about using your journalism background to create videos to help students understand history so much better. And it's going to be really fun. Our guest is Lauren Shella. She attended San Diego State from 2010 through 2013. She currently is a teacher at McFarland High School in Bakersfield. She teaches world history, social science, but she's probably best known for the videos that she has created on TikTok, Instagram, wherever you get your videos on social media that are titled Gen Z History Lessons. They are fun. They are informative. They are very effective. And oh, by the way, she was also recently a contestant on the NBC game show Password. Lauren, my goodness, I cannot wait to start this conversation. Welcome to the Where You At podcast.
Thank you so much for having me, Josh.
Okay, so I know that this is the cheapest way ever to set up a question, but I'm going to do it anyways. If I had told you as a freshman back in 2010 that you are going to be a high school teacher and that you are going to create videos on some type of platform called TikTok that are going to go viral, what in the world would you think about your future life, Lauren?
Oh my goodness. You know what? I want to say that I might have not even believed it, but maybe I would have, because in 2010, 2011, when I was back at State, I was taking classes in journalism that was talking about that. So that was something that hadn't really existed yet, but the professors that we had were already talking about social media, algorithms, AI, augmented reality, like, and this is like when Facebook is still new to most people, but they were like saying that this social media thing, you know, we have a way to be applying this to business and journalism and things like that. So these ideas have been in my head for a while, but if you would have told me that it would have gotten this big, I would have not ever seen that coming.
Well, you were a journalism major and a history minor. And so let's kind of go back to the basics of your interest in both of them, how those interests developed, and how you've been able to merge those two together now.
Yeah. So Josh, you know, I think I am most interested in storytelling and journalism and history. You know, there's a really famous quote that says, you know, journalism is just the first draft of history, right? One is telling stories of what people are doing right now, and one is telling stories of the people who came before us. So to me, they're related. As a journalism major at State, you have to pick a minor. So I just chose one that I just personally enjoyed. And I emphasized on, you know, modern world history, just because that was my favorite class in high school. You know, I was fascinated by the subject. So turns out that I ended up actually, I know a lot of people say they don't really get to use their major or minor in the real world. I'm very lucky because I get to use both.
Okay, so I'm going to talk a little bit more about what you do now, and then we're going to rewind a little bit more to what you did at San Diego State, because I want to hook people in right away. So you teach history, you teach social science. Tell us the evolution of how you decided to start making these videos, both for your classroom and then for the world to see.
Yes. So I started teaching full time at McFarland High School in 2018, and the first year that I was in, I loved it. Everything was great. And I really focused on making connections with my students. Found out very quickly that nobody cares to memorize dates or facts. But when you tell it like a story in a way that's like a narrative style, that's just more conducive to the way that I speak and who I am as a person. And, you know, the kids can see through, you know, someone that's being fake. So when I just tell the story with like passion, the kids were really into it. So that's what I would do in my classroom, Josh. Like when it got kind of boring, which history kind of, you know, sometimes you have to get through that part to have them understand the concepts. I would just kind of stop and be like, okay, guys, so this, what this means is this, this, this. And they'd be like, oh, okay, I get it. So that's what good teachers do. like across the board in every subject, in every generation. I had teachers do that for me. It doesn't have to be, you know, in a slang or anything like that. But then the pandemic happened, right? So we shut down for those 2 weeks, which turned into a year and a half. And we were all online here for an entire year. So I didn't have a way to connect with my students. So I started making videos to send to them on Google Classroom or for our Zoom lessons. And that kind of helped me get more comfortable on camera and speaking about history on camera. And that was really the first time I tried that. And then when we came back the following year, my students were like, I really enjoyed those videos, Miss. Like, or you should make more videos like that on TikTok. And I was like, well, like I've heard of TikTok, but like that's kind of for older people. And they were like, no, it's not. Like people go on there to learn stuff. And I was like, I thought it was just kind of like dancing. And they were like, no, it's not. And around the same time, Instagram had been experimenting with Reels. And I was kind of like, okay, this is not really going away. I think short form video content is like kind of where it's at. Cause I had a teacher Instagram, but it hadn't really been growing. So I was like, whatever, I'm just going to try it. And I started that Gen Z history series. And at first, it wasn't very viral at first, but for the people that followed me, the few thousand people that followed me, they loved it. And, you know, I just kind of kept doing more and I started it back up again the following year, and it completely took off. I swore I was a one-hit wonder, but I was like, that was the Russian Revolution was my first big video. And I was like, okay, well, I can do that all day because I literally do. So I did another one on the French Revolution and that got even bigger. And I was like, oh my gosh. So I just kept going. And, you know, I think now I have like 25 of them and I have way more to come. So people are still learning and enjoying it. So I'm going to keep making it.
When you decide that you're going to make a video, tell us your process of how long it takes for an idea, how long it takes for kind of like scripting out or even just like mentally thinking about it. And then the filmmaking, the video of it, and then the editing. Kind of give us this might be a short video, but about the time that's involved in making this and making it a really good one.
Yes. So there's definitely a process to making these videos. So it starts out with an idea. Usually it kind of comes to me in class by how I had to explain that subject in class. So I'll just do like a more dramatic, satirical version of that. Or sometimes when, for example, Mexican Independence Day was coming up, or Cinco de Mayo was coming up, or St. Patrick's Day was coming up, I'll try and time it with those events if I can fit it into my schedule. But I start with that idea and I'll try and think of the hook, because, you know, on those videos, you only have like 1 second. So the opening line has to be really good. It has to be something like Archduke Franz Ferdinand caught the fade. And it has to be like, it has to make you stop. So that first line has to kind of be ridiculous enough that people stop. So that's got to be good. And then from there, I build it out with the intro. So it always starts with so, and it always has a date and a place. So we kind of set the stage. This is the opening. And then you really get into the actual story, the history. This is the middle part. This is where all of the facts and dates are going to be. So I write them out and I fact check very thoroughly, because, you know, it's the internet. If I say one thing wrong, which I have, if I pronounce one thing wrong, if I get one fact wrong, I could potentially have millions of people correcting me. So I go through that, fact check it very, very thoroughly, try and throw in pop culture references, try and throw in as much slang that I hear the kids saying in class. There is a Taylor Swift reference in every video. People enjoy looking for those. And then I always end the video. I move like the coffee over and I say, meanwhile, you know, to kind of set the stage. And then I ask if there's any questions. So those are all of the things that I have to have. The iced coffee, that got really expensive because it can take me a few takes and it was like melting. So I literally have fake ice. And sometimes it's coffee. Sometimes it's like chocolate milk. This is like movie magic. I'm literally in my classroom on my iPhone 12 that's cracked, and I just have them like on books. So I'm too embarrassed to bring like a ring light to school in front of my kids. So I'm filming after school. My poor custodian is trying to come in and clean, and he sees me in there and he's like, oh my gosh. And he just comes back later. So I have gotten walked in on before. It's so embarrassing. I would say it takes me on average 3 to 5 takes because I have to get it all in one breath. That's kind of like the trick. It's not really that impressive if it has the cuts in there. So I got to get it all in one take under 90 seconds. And after that, I just sort of caption it and that's it. So since it's one take, there's not too much editing after. So that's the only good part about that.
So you are a one woman band when it comes to putting all this together. You don't have any students who are volunteering to at least be behind the camera or to help act out any of this. You're all completely doing this on your own.
I am on my own. Yes. My students, I would say sometimes they will say, Miss, you should make a video about that. Or they'll definitely give me ideas. But I think I would be way too embarrassed to actually do this in front of all of them. They would be like laughing and cringing. So no, to be clear, there's not actually students in the room. Like that isn't my literal lecture. Unfortunately for my students, I do teach for an hour straight and it's like a real lesson. So they don't just come in for 1 minute, hear that, and then get to leave. So it's more of like a dramatization or a satirical way to get the point across and hopefully a starting point for, you know, young people or really anybody that just is like, oh, I get it. That's interesting. Let me go find out more. Or like, I realizing that they can understand history and that it's funny and interesting, and maybe they feel empowered that they can do more research on their own.
It's really easy for a teacher, other teachers, I should say, a principal, superintendent, even parents to say, you know, that's fine, Lauren, but come on, your real job is to teach. So explain what type of reaction you've heard from your peers and from the other adults about just what you're doing to try to connect.
Josh, where I'm at McFarland High School, people say that I'm famous, but actually my school is kind of famous. So McFarland USA was a 2015 Disney movie starring Kevin Costner about our cross country runners. So, you know, our school does have a little bit of notoriety around it before I showed up. And I think since it's such a small town, and I've worked here for a while, this is my 6th year, and I've established that trust with my administrators. I know my superintendent, his name's Aaron Resendez. I know him by name. I think here I can maybe get away with it because the community is so small and so supportive, and they know that I'm just here to show that I'm invested in these kids. They know that I'm here just to spread a message of positivity to help kids get interested in history. The kids definitely found out about it first because they have TikTok and they would tell me that I came up on their For You page. And at first I was like, oh no, I was probably somebody else. Like I tried to like keep it under wraps. But you know, after it kind of like blew up and it like got on the news, and I always wondered, I'm like, does everybody in the district like know about this? But like now they definitely do now. And they've reached out and congratulated me. And I'm very fortunate, but it's because our district is very forward thinking. Like we're an early college. We have kids taking like digital media courses and classes. All of our, you know, ASB activities, they're on social media. So I think the school is choosing to kind of embrace a lot of these new technologies instead of being afraid of them, because they just really want to give our students like the tools that they need to be successful in the future. And I think I'm seen as like a positive role model for my kids in the community as, you know, a way to use social media like for good. So in that regard, I'm very lucky and very blessed, because I believe it's because of where I am that, you know, the school has been supportive. Because you're right, at other places that, you know, it might not work out the way that it had, but I'm really supported by my staff and my students and my community here.
When it comes to these videos blowing up, going viral, whatever phrase we want to use, I think that any college student who listens to this or anyone who's just trying to grow their audience just thinks, okay, how did you do it? I want to do that. So obviously it starts with, it has to be really good, right? And so beyond that, what are some other things? You mentioned at the beginning, there's got to be a hook right away, but what are other things that you figured out along the way that have helped your videos find people who don't know who you are?
Okay, there's a few things. So you have, if your goal is to grow on social media, if that's your goal, if you want to use it for business, there's a few things that I've learned. This might sound harsh, but you have to stop using social media as your personal diary because nobody cares. I have a daughter. I have, you know, my parents and grandparents and friends. I love them all very much. They all have birthdays, but nobody cares. So if your goal is to grow on social media, there has to be value, entertainment, ideally both, in what you're saying. You get probably one shot to go viral. Okay, you probably get one shot. And if your video that goes viral is a one-off, if it's you like jumping off of a cliff and you can never jump off a cliff again, people are going to go to your profile. That's your chance. That's your moment. They're going to go to your profile and they're going to look, does this girl have other videos of her jumping off cliffs? And if you don't, they're not going to follow. So you have to have a backlog of similar content that's of that high caliber. So, you know, when my Gen Z one went viral, I had a backlog of like funny teacher history videos. So the people that saw that video, you know, there was like tens and tens of millions, right? So even of the tens and tens of millions that saw that viral series, I my followers across Instagram, TikTok is still 250,000. That's still like a pretty small amount of them that actually followed. But the ones who did actually follow are the ones that are interested in history. So if I started now posting about my dog or, you know, things like that, nobody cares. Apart from that, there's some basics. The majority of people do not watch videos with their sound on. They're at work. So you need to have captions on your video. Trending audios are dead. You're not going to grow by posting trending audios. Maybe every now and then, if there's a fun trend, if you can find a way to relate it to your niche, but it's hard. It was hard for me. I started doing like the lip singing reels, like to the trends. Like that was how I got started. It's great to get comfortable on camera, but you have to use your own voice. It has to be you. It has to be you talking. If you're just lip syncing to those little things, like the audience is getting more sophisticated. The bar keeps getting raised. It used to be, can you post a picture? And then, you know, now my mom posts pictures on. So now that doesn't grow. Then it's, can you make a video? But then now kind of the average person even knows how to make like a reel, like it does it for you. And now it's like, can you do original audio? Can you write a script? Can you do a screenplay? Like the bar keeps getting higher. So if you want to stand out, like you have to keep leveling up your content, like every time these new features roll out.
All of that advice, Lauren, was so good and so practical. Let's rewind a little bit. Let's go back to college. When you were a freshman at San Diego State, what did you think you wanted to be when you grew up? And why did you pick San Diego State to start your education?
I majored in journalism because I really loved writing and reading and telling stories, and I'm very social and I was passionate, you know, about all of the things going, like I just wanted to make the world a better place, and I thought that that was the talent that I could have to do that. I probably envisioned maybe being like a news anchor or something on TV, or, you know, writing for a newspaper or a magazine. Like that was kind of the dream in the 2000s, like all the 2000s movie, like the Boss Babe girl, she always works at like a magazine, you know, like, so maybe that's kind of what I had in my head. But then like right around 2010, when I got, you know, everyone started saying like, oh, print media is dead. And I'm like, oh, oops. people are saying like, oh, there's not going to be journalism anymore because everyone just gets their news on Facebook or the internet. And, you know, I heard that from like people in my family or my friends were like, why are you majoring in journalism? Like nobody even reads newspapers anymore. And so that was kind of scary. So, but when I got into the actual classes, I think obviously the professors and staff were very aware of these changes. And so I think I had a chance to get ahead of it and, you know, thinking about these jobs that I wanted to have, the job that I wanted to have, like an influencer or a TikToker or, you know, a content creator, those terms did not exist in 2010. So I would have never told you any of this.
You worked at the Daily Aztec, and I noticed from your LinkedIn, the part about taking graphics and photos and merging it all so that you're telling a story where it's not just about the words, but that you're putting all of the pieces together. And I feel like this was the part of what you ultimately do now. So give us more details about you in college, photography, graphics, pull quotes, putting it all together into a really visually pleasing story.
Yes. So I was able to get on staff at the Daily Aztec as a staff writer. And then later I was a features editor. So thinking about all of the things that makes a good story, a headline, a lead, a hook, quotes, like citing your sources, like having an attractive photo. Those are all things that go into making a great video too. Like it looks different, but you know, the process is the same. Your caption has to add value or your editor will be mad or your audience will get annoyed. It very much relates. Like you have to get to the point very quickly in your lead, like the inverted pyramid that they teach you, like in 101, like you have to have the good at the top. Otherwise they're going to get flipped and they're going to skip. So like the basics are still the same. And, you know, when I was at the Daily Aztec, we, you know, kind of began experimenting also with like digital media. Cause like, you know, that was new at the time. So, you know, we had an Instagram, we had a Twitter, and you know, people think that the first time I went viral was on TikTok and Instagram. It actually wasn't. The first time I went viral was actually on Twitter. And it was actually when I was a student at SDSU.
Please tell the story.
So at San Diego State, when I was there, Twitter was something that was very new and very exciting. I remember one of my professors, Dr. Rebecca Nee, her like class, like her homework would be like to tweet what was going on at the Oscars. Like that was our homework assignment. How cool is that? Right. So I began using Twitter and I actually ran like a course at the SPJ, Student Professional Journalism, how to use Twitter. I had 1,000 followers on Twitter, which was like so many back then. And when the Boston bombing happened at the marathon, everybody was, you know, tweeting about it. And I did a hashtag called SDSU Loves Boston. I started that and I told all of my friends in JMS to retweet it. And some celebrities started retweeting it. You can fact check this. I'm not quite sure. Maybe cut it out. But I believe Marshall Faulk retweeted it. And it started picking up caption. And then we were like, oh my gosh, let's get it trending. And we got hashtag SDSU loves Boston to trend. Matthew Hall at the Union Tribune called us and wrote an article about it. The Daily Aztec wrote an article about it. We got on the local news and I linked up with another student at the school and we ended up turning it into like an Indiegogo or like a crowdfunding initiative and actually ended up raising money for some of the victims of the Boston bombing marathon. So that was the first time that I realized like social media is powerful and it connects people from all over the world. And this was happening like this was over 10 years ago, Josh. So that was the first time I ever actually went viral.
I love the story and I remember this and I swear I'm not making this up because I remember where I was that day. I was broadcasting a minor league baseball game in Des Moines, Iowa. And I remember it was after the game that I was reading about what happened. And I remember seeing trending. SDSU loves Boston. And I remember thinking to myself, how in the world is this trending? Like, what is it about San Diego State that is making this happen? I remember it was you. I had a bunch of friends who attended San Diego State who were from Boston. It felt like every year there was like four different guys from the same small town outside of Boston that came out to San Diego State. And I was wondering if it was them. I didn't have the foggiest idea. And now I know this is exactly what happened. And I totally remember reading this on the bus when we were going from Des Moines, Iowa to Omaha, Nebraska. And now I know why this was trending.
Yes. So that was definitely my proudest moment. And it's because my professors and my JMS like fellow students, like everybody, like people didn't really know what that was. Right. But like I said, in the JMS world, we were so ahead of these things. So, you know, when I was saying like, let's get this hashtag trending, like people weren't like, Lauren, that's stupid. My professors were like, yeah, like let's do it too. Everybody was so supportive. And that's how we got it to trend.
What are some of your other best memories from San Diego State? Even if it's not a trending hashtag, what else do you reflect on when someone says, hey, Lauren, what was it like going to San Diego State? How do you answer that?
The best part about San Diego State was probably working at the Daily Aztec. That's where I made some of my lifelong friends, many who went on to be professional journalists. And it was also the professors that I had. So In addition to, I think, Dr. Nee that I already mentioned, who was talking about social media before it even existed, was Dr. Noah Arsenault. He was like the main professor that I had for almost every course. And we kind of had like the little same group of students that would, you know, be in every course with him. So shout out to the Sisterhood of the Six, if you guys are listening. And I was selected as the most outstanding graduate for the School of Journalism. And I was the first media studies major to ever have that distinction, because media studies was a pretty new major in the School of Journalism. There was already like journalism, PR, advertising, but media studies was like the new one. So I was really honored to get that. And then I selected Noah Arsenault as like my most influential professor. So I got to be on the stage at graduation and, you know, receive that recognition from, you know, this like PSFA and JMS. So that was probably my proudest moment at San Diego State. And I did graduate a year early, which was kind of stupid. I wish I could have stayed there forever because I loved everything about my time there. So many people just like were mentors to me. And I'm just really so grateful for like all of the classes that I took and all of the people that I met. I would say the best part about it, besides the weather and making it to the Sweet 16 for the first time and having a class with Kawhi Leonard, probably the best part of it was the people and the professors that I met.
So you finished 1 year early. I finished 1 year late. I was on the 5-year plan and I was still kind of thinking about whether I could turn that into the 6-year plan. So props to you for finishing the classes that you needed to finish. So with all of this, why did you want to become a teacher? And I know that there was a number of different jobs that you did in between there, which we can get into if you'd like. But what was it that made you decide I'm not actually going to pursue daily journalism from kind of an old school standpoint and more become a teacher?
You know, you mentioned some of those other jobs. You know, I did like my first professional job out of college. I worked for like a small like travel website company writing articles, you know, and I also did like some promotion stuff with like Pacific Magazine. So I had some smaller like journalism experiences, but I did not like being in an office. I hated it. I just felt like I didn't want to sit there and just like turn out articles all day in a cubicle. I really wanted to be more like out there. And, you know, there are journalists doing that. And it just that didn't happen for me, honestly. And when I got married and I, you know, journalism is a career where you have to give up a lot and you have to work really, really hard for something that might never even happen. So when I decided to get married and we moved to Bakersfield, it was, you know, a completely different, you know, market here. And I realized, you know, what I loved so much was not necessarily maybe journalism, but it was storytelling and it was being around people. And like, that is what I really liked. And, you know, since I loved history so much, I was like, I would probably rather, because I thought about teaching English, but I didn't want to grade all the papers. So I was like, I'll do history. And, you know, I had a professor at San Diego State, Dr. Jeffrey Hay, and, you know, he was kind of older and like, he didn't do any like fancy things. He literally sat on a stool and just like paced back and forth and just told you what happened. And all of the tests were like, you had to write on a piece of paper, but he was the best professor that I ever had because he was just such a good storyteller. And I was so inspired by that. So that's kind of how I run my class. And I subbed for a while and I loved it. So once I, you know, they say once you start teaching, if you can make it through your first year, like you can probably, you'll know after your first year if you can do it. And I loved it. So the transition to me was really seamless and I love it. And I feel like it's my passion and my calling.
I wish I remembered the name of this professor, but my favorite non-journalism class that I took at San Diego State was a history professor. And it was history through biographies. And I remember we would compare and contrast Martin Luther King versus Malcolm X of two different ways of ultimately trying to accomplish the same thing. And once again, it comes back to the passionate storytelling of a professor, of a teacher. And I remember just watching this professor, just being in awe at times as he told the story and just his pacing and his delivery. And I was just enthralled and I didn't want the classes to end. And to this day, when I read books, I mostly just want to read biographies. And it was because of that class. I love learning history through one individual, how one individual shaped history. And I don't know quite where I'm going with this question right now, other than just the power of being able to take what sometimes can be dry events and finding a way to make it important and make it and make it something where the students feel like I did, where they don't want you to stop talking, which is rare because normally students can't wait for the teacher to shut up.
Absolutely. I think putting it into a narrative style, making it a story, like what's going to happen next, instead of just a random collection of dates and facts. And then when the story keeps going and like the kids will start saying, wait, is that why this is like that today? And I'm like, yes, it is. And, you know, they're finally getting it. And you're telling the whole story, not like the version you get in like kindergarten, but like the real story, like, you know, older kids, teenagers, college students are going to be very interested because they're intelligent. They have access to the internet. So when they're getting the real story that does include everybody, they are a lot more interested.
No, that's a really good segue in terms of how much freedom do you have to pick which textbooks we're going to use? This is what we're going to read off. Like what subjects we're going to learn and how much time we're going to spend on them so that you can really make it as much relatable as you think that it should be.
You know, at my district, I was part of the committee that adopted the curriculum. So, you know, we do have a traditional textbook that I use because I do still think that I try and actually get my, I know it's crazy because I'm like a TikToker, but I actually try and get my kids off the screen as much as possible because the novelty has worn off. I think it fries their brains to be on a screen for 8 hours a day. So I have it and we use it, but I do think there is nothing wrong with being in a textbook or reading from a traditional book. That's good for your brain sometimes. But what I do is I couple it with a story, with scaffolds, like with an explanation. I front load the information a lot. I have them, you know, create like inquiry based assignments a lot. So in California, there are state standards that we are required to teach. But, you know, the framework that we have a lot more flexibility. So, you know, for example, where I teach, the vast majority of our students are, you know, Hispanic. Or have parents that have immigrated from usually Mexico. So, you know, that informs my teaching. Like I'm going to try to incorporate like more Mexican history than maybe is in the textbook because those are the students that I have in front of me. So while, you know, we do have a curriculum and we do have standards that we have to follow. So unfortunately I can't just like spend an entire year talking about Henry VIII's wives. Like that would be cool. But like, I do have like standards that I have to hit, you know, to make sure that the kids, you know, are prepared for the next year and to graduate, meet all the requirements. We do have freedom in how we teach that. So I'm really grateful, you know, to, you know, California and the district that, you know, they give us that freedom because it's really just me and my department. We make all of the tests together. So I don't feel like they hand us something and we have to use that. That's not how it is. I was part of the committee that designed the CFAs and the finals. We use DBQ. So we mostly just use projects and the kids have to like analyze the documents and they make the meaning from it. So I'm really grateful for that opportunity here because I know that, you know, it's really fraught right now in history education. There's laws being passed on, you know, all sides of the aisle to teach this, don't teach this, teach this, don't teach this. But, you know, when you talk to most history teachers, you talk to most kids that are actually there on the ground, not politicians who have never set foot in the classroom in their lives or in the last 30 years. But when you actually talk to like kids that are in school and real history teachers that are in school, you know, the conversations that are happening are very honest and nobody's trying to force anybody to believe anything. We're just trying to tell these kids the truth and get them to be critical thinkers. And, you know, kids are smart. They're welcome to make their own decisions. So I think if you just approach the subject with a lot of respect for, you know, everyone's experiences that they have, I think most of the time it's going to be successful.
Okay. Let's discuss your appearance on this TV show, Password. And I don't know how much all of this is related, but we're about to find out. So you were on the NBC game show, Password. Tell us about why you tried to get on it and how you ended up on the show.
So a producer from Password found me on TikTok and I got an email and I thought I was like, is this fake? But it wasn't. So she called me and we did like a quick little interview to make sure I wasn't like, you know, a weirdo or something. And then, you know, you have to go through a whole series of, you know, Zoom interviews where you practice and play the game and, you know, all of that. I was actually, you know, not sure if I was going to be on because I was pregnant at the time. And then I had my baby and then I hadn't heard from them. And then the writer's strike happened and then the actor's strike happened and it's a celebrity game show with writers. So that's everybody. So I'm like, well, we're out. It's probably canceled. But then that all ended and they called me right back and we picked up right where we left off. And, you know, I made it to the final audition. And they literally called me and they were like at night and they were like, you made it. Can you be here like in 2 days? And I was like, yes, because it was just at Universal Studios. So it wasn't so far. And it was so much fun. I still can't believe that that really happened. It is not scripted. It's totally real. I swear we don't know the clues. Jimmy doesn't know the clues. There's an audience. It's very, very real. I was very afraid. I was going to be so embarrassed in front of millions of people. But thankfully, I'm a teacher, so I embarrass myself daily anyway in the classroom, on the internet. So I'm like, how bad could it be? And it ended up being so much fun.
When she said Jimmy, she's referring to Jimmy Fallon.
Please. Oh, yeah. We're on a first name basis. Yeah, yeah.
Give us the story of lock in and the word lock in, the phrase lock in that you use with Jimmy.
What's really great about Password is you get a chance to meet with Jimmy Fallon, Keke Palmer. I was with Nikki and Brie Garcia, the Garcia twins or the Bella twins. And you're like hanging out backstage and they are so good at making you feel comfortable and you feel like you know them and you're just like hanging out. So when you're on the stage, you've already been like hanging out with them for a while. So you're just talking like naturally. All of the jitters are gone. And I was really trying to win, Josh, you know, like I didn't come to make friends. I came to win. I was really trying to win. And so like when my students are not doing their work, like I'll be like, guys, do your work, and they'll be like, oh, we're locked in, and I'm like, okay, like you're not though. So as a joke, I started telling my kids to lock in, and it just makes them just like cringe and die a little bit inside, and it kills the fun immediately, so they do their work. But now it's kind of become like an inside joke. And so like when I was just like eye to eye with Jimmy and he was looking at me, I just said it, and like I couldn't take it back, and it worked though, because we got that clue and we got the full points and we won that round. So maybe the kids are onto something with the locking in saying.
Well, that's what Stephen Curry always tweets out on game day to the Warriors. He tells Warrior Nation, lock in, Dub Nation. So I think it absolutely works. If it works for Steph Curry, then I think it works for you and Jimmy Fallon.
Perfect. Good enough for me.
Where can people watch your episode?
So the episode now is streaming on Peacock, if you have Peacock, or you can just go to NBC.com or the app and you can watch it for free with ads.
Okay, outstanding. I don't know if you're allowed to talk about these things, but I read about how the History Channel has contacted you about a JFK documentary. What are you allowed to tell us about your involvement in this documentary?
So basically, through social media and some of these different opportunities that I've had, some of them were brand deals. So if you would have asked me, what's your dream brand deal? I would have said the History Channel. And I've actually worked with the History Channel. And that's crazy. So basically, you know, documentaries on the History Channel, probably an older audience. So I'm assuming, you know, they reached out to me because they want, you know, younger people who are on TikTok to, you know, be aware of that. So I was able to do an ad for a documentary that they had coming out about, you know, John F. Kennedy. So that was really cool because obviously I teach about John F. Kennedy in my class. So that connection was great. And I did it kind of in the Gen Z style. Another deal that I did was related to history was with Apple TV Plus. So most history people are really familiar with the Band of Brothers franchise, probably considered like the greatest miniseries of all time. I'll fight anyone who disagrees. Like I grew up having like the box set on DVD because I'm kind of a little bit of an older millennial. And they have a new, then there was the follow-up with the Pacific, and they had a third one come out recently this year called Masters of the Air, with, you know, Spielberg and Tom Hanks producing and the Austin Butler starring. So I got to go to the World War II Museum and explain like that whole entire thing, like the whole Western front of the air in World War II, like in a Gen Z style in front of the actual planes that were flown in World War II. But this was kind of different because I was on location. We talked about how I'm normally like in front of nobody. That was like a real shoot with a real camera, and they were producers and they had the script and they were reading, like the Apple producers, they're reading to make sure I'm saying all the lines right, because it's like, that's, you know, I can't be saying like inaccurate facts about, you know, World War II. So that was so nerve wracking. But, you know, I think getting to work with like my dream brands and talk about, you know, history projects that I am really excited about. And I feel like I'm just like sharing like what I'm excited about with my followers. And that's like what I do anyway. And now sometimes I can even get paid to do that. Like that is amazing to me. So I'm just riding the wave as long as it goes.
When you do need to make sure that every word is right and there is all of these people around, what is your process for memorizing words or memorizing facts? give us your breakdown of how you make sure that you get this right without messing up or getting in your own head.
Whether it's for, you know, a brand deal or for my own video, you do have to memorize these scripts. So I think part of my journalism training, you know, came in handy because, you know, you have to keep the viewer engaged with your voice. You have to have the right inflections with your voice. You can't be talking too fast. You can't be talking too slow. So I think I'm a 90s Valley girl. So I naturally just talk really fast anyway. So that's helpful. And usually this is kind of key, is like I have the script, I have the words, and I know the key facts that I have to hit, but each take will be a little bit different. So as long as I just have in my head like the key facts that I need to hit and those key dates that I cannot get wrong, I don't usually try and memorize every single word, as long as I'm getting the facts correct. And then I can kind of maybe ad lib a little bit and just kind of see how it flows. I think that also makes it sound more natural and conversational. So I think the audience kind of enjoys that more. It doesn't sound like I'm reading off a teleprompter, because I'm not.
When it comes to riding this wave of all these awesome, fun things that you've been doing, let's manifest a little bit. What are the other things that you want to continue doing that you hope to achieve in telling history lessons to a wide variety of both high school students and TV viewers?
Oh my goodness, Josh. Well, you know, now that I know what's possible, I would just have to say probably one day I would like to build this out into like some sort of series, whether it could be like on television or on YouTube or anything like that. If I had a little bit more time and I'm a little bit more organized, this did kind of happen pretty quickly. So it seems like it happened overnight, but I had all the tools in my pocket, but then it did happen. So I'm still playing catch up. I do envision creating some sort of curriculum that goes along with all of these videos, because I do know a lot of my followers are teachers, homeschool parents, just regular people that want to know about history. I've thought about, you know, doing some sort of book club where I get to, you know, engage with my listeners or anyone who's interested there. I would love to do an event that is like geared towards history. Cause like once you're like over 30, I feel like there's not really that many events about history that are like not really boring. And clearly there's a market for people that want to learn history and not be bored. So I just have so many ideas right now flowing in my head, and I just can't wait to see what happens.
Yeah, that's awesome. Well, that's why I asked you the question, because for whoever listens to this, if they heard something, they go, you know, I've been thinking about that too. So I'll see if we can get people connected. Like, hey, I've already got this idea. I've already got this. And we'll see if we can bring people together on this, because definitely count me in. I love history. And whenever there's something that's a fun way of learning history, like, I'm all about it. So awesome. Before we wrap things up, what else should I have asked you that I've not asked you that you would like to add to this conversation before we say goodbye?
I think you got most of it. I had like my little note sheet and everything on the note sheet's there. So I think you nailed it, Josh.
How about this? Is there any other piece of advice that you would offer to a current college student who is majoring in journalism and media studies and maybe doesn't know exactly which direction that it's going to take them? Knowing everything that you know about all the different directions it's taken them, what would be your just advice to, say, a freshman at San Diego State?
That's great. So my advice to anyone who's going to San Diego State, or especially who's majoring in journalism or JMS at San Diego State, is to find the community of people there that understand what you're doing, and don't listen to anybody else. Because if I would have listened to people that would have told me that journalism is dead, like that major is so stupid, why don't you go major in like something STEM or science? You know, I heard that from, you know, even my own family. People were, you know, like, that doesn't make any money, right? It doesn't matter. Like my grandparents don't really understand what I do. That's okay. Like the job that you are going to do probably doesn't exist. You are there. You're in the greatest university in the world. Like, I remember we had these extended studies courses, and they were one unit courses, which was really great, because I think it was Dr. Borden that made these classes. Like, they were so responsive to what was going on. Take as many classes as you can. Get a mentor. Like, and just, you have everything that you need is there. Like, the professors that you have are there to support you. They're there to help you. They know what they are talking about. Trust me. So get involved, whether it's, you know, and even if you don't know exactly what it is, just get involved, because you are surrounded by like the smartest people, and all of them are going to be so successful, and you're going to stay in touch, and there's going to be so many opportunities. So just find your people.
Love that advice so much. All right. We wrap up this podcast by bragging about other San Diego State alums. Normally, I allow the guests to go first, but I want to start first because what you just said was find your people. And one of the people that I found when I was at San Diego State is a guy by the name of Jacob Dalton. We both grew up in the Bay Area, so we already had the Bay Area sports teams where we could just immediately talk to each other. He's a friend of mine to this day. He teaches at Martin Luther King Middle School in Berkeley. He's taught journalism. He's taught yearbook, physical education. He's taught a wide variety of things. He's a dear friend of mine, and I'm just really proud. I remember he showed up at one of my book signings, and he brought the student newspaper that they put together, and I was blown away at how many stories they wrote and the quality of the stories and everything about it. And so it just makes me really proud to see what Jacob is doing to teach students journalism before they even get to college. So my shout out this week goes to Jacob Dalton.
Amazing. Josh, I thought of another thing to say.
Yeah, let's hear it.
So I don't know if I mentioned this, but actually when I started teaching at McFarland High School, there wasn't a journalism class. And I think every college needs to have a school newspaper, like for it to really, you know, be a school. So I started it as a club. My first year here, we had like 3 or 4 kids. Kept going through the pandemic. So we don't have a huge budget, but now it is like a full-fledged elective class. And so one of my proudest moments as, you know, students is to see that my students not only are learning these skills, and I told them, if you're not going to be a journalist, like that's okay. You still need to learn how to like talk to people, how to interview, how to fact check, how to write, how to communicate. Like these are skills that are going to serve you in no matter what career you have. But I've had the chance to see a lot of my students, you know, move on and even major in journalism, get published in local outlets, you know, across the community here. So, you know, I am just so grateful that I can instill some of that knowledge of journalism that even if I didn't get to quite, you know, live out my dream of being a newspaper reporter, I'm doing something else. You know, my students are the ones that are now going out into the journalism world. I'm giving them, you know, that wisdom that was instilled with me. So that's probably one of my proudest moments as a teacher.
Oh, that's awesome. That's fantastic. Because I was actually thinking at parts during this conversation that you should be teaching high school journalism because of all of the different things that you're doing. But then I thought, She does enough. Turns out you are.
I am. Yes, I'm the journalism club advisor. Yes, I am.
All right. Whether it's the Sisterhood of the Six or whomever else, give us shout outs about other San Diego State alums who make you proud.
So shout out to one of my best friends from San Diego State. Her name is Ashley Williams, and she was one of the coolest people that I've ever met there. She's still very cool, doing some awesome things in the journalism world. So proud to know her and proud to be an Aztec with her.
All right, Lauren, proud of everything that you have done and continue to do. We will continue cheering you along. And so continue to keep us updated on all the different projects that you're working on so that we can spread the word to everybody. And thanks so much for joining us this week on the podcast.
Thank you, Josh. It was great to talk to you.
Where can they follow you on TikTok?
Yeah. So my handle on Instagram, I finally got it. It was taken for a long time, but I finally got it. It's at Lauren Cella, C-E-L-L-A. And on TikTok, it's at Laurencella92 because I was born in 1992 because I'm not actually Gen Z. I'm an old millennial. I'm 31. But yes, at Laurencella or at Laurencella92.
Follow her. All right, Lauren, thank you so much. My name is Josh Sushan. I'm your host. Thank you for listening to this week's Where You At podcast, and we will talk to you again next week.
Thanks for listening to the Where You At podcast. This is Devin Watley from the class of 2021. Thanks to Martine Marine for creating the music you're hearing right now, and Alex Piscatelli for her work on the podcast name and artwork on social media. And a reminder to SDSU alums, we really want to know where you're at. Tell us about your career. Get involved in the school. There's many ways you can do this, from donating your time or money, mentoring students, to even speaking in classrooms in person or on Zoom. Your work can help us grow the program and create more opportunities for our students to succeed. Again, thanks for listening. Subscribe to this podcast. Tell your friends. Recommend us a future guest. And go Aztecs.